Good evening and welcome to the Business of Government Hour, Conversations with Government Leaders. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and a co-chair of the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. To find out more about the endowment, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. The Business of Government Hour focuses on outstanding government executives who are changing the way government does business. Our special guest tonight is Mark Grossman, Director General of the Foreign Service and Director of Human Resources at the U.S. Department of State. Welcome, Mark.
Good evening. Thank you very much for having me.
And joining us tonight in our conversation is Patty Fisher, also a PwC partner. Welcome, Patty.
Good evening, Paul.
Well, Mark, in this first segment, we'd like to begin by talking about your career. We understand you joined the Foreign Service in 1976 and have held various positions since then. Could you tell us about some of these positions in your career?
Well, I'd be glad to. And first, let me thank you very much for this opportunity. I did join the Foreign Service in 1976 and have had the opportunity to serve in Pakistan as my first post, and then back in Washington in various positions in the State Department. I've served again in Belgium and twice in Turkey, and most recently was the Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, and just before that had the good fortune to be the U.S. Ambassador to Turkey.
Mark, what drew you to public service?
Well, I felt at the time, when I look back now in 1976, I really felt I wanted to do something for my country. As you'll remember, it was kind of the end of the Vietnam War, and many of us didn't have the opportunity to serve. And I felt I really had an obligation to the United States, and I had been abroad, and I thought that this would be a good combination. I could get to see something of the world and serve my country at the same time.
Do you still think it's an attractive career choice for people now?
Oh, absolutely. And when I'm asked this by people who are considering it, I tell them without reservation that it's a good thing. I mean, we don't pay maybe as much as somebody in the private sector. But I always tell people that the difference is you get to work in an office where the American flag flies. And I think that's worth a lot. And the things that drew me into the Foreign Service, service to the public, service to the United States, service to American citizens, and really service to those of us in the service, in other words, to our own small family, I think are still compelling reasons to be in the State Department, whether you're in the Foreign Service or the Civil Service.
What do you study in school to get attracted to the State Department?
Well, luckily, we have people from all kinds of backgrounds. And one of the things that I would never do was to say that you have to be from one kind of background to be in the Foreign Service. I really believe that it's the diversity of the United States, whether that means race or background or gender or what you studied in college, which makes the Foreign Service such a good representative of the United States. When we sit around a table and try to solve a problem, it's a good thing to have varying opinions and various views. And whether someone was educated as a lawyer or went to school and got a doctorate in English, or myself went to UC Santa Barbara and I did do political science, all of those I think are good for the United States if they're all brought together. So we're looking for people with a broad background, with a lot of common sense, and a desire to serve their country.
Mark, you've seen so many issues and been to so many places. What management challenges would you say best served you and gave you opportunities to develop as a leader?
Well, it's a fair question. I'd cite two or three things. First of all, I have come to believe, toward the end of my career, I don't know, but I've been in the Foreign Service now 26 years, and I've come to believe that one of the things that we must do a better job is marrying responsibility for policy and resources. And I've had the good fortune to work for people and work in places where I was given that responsibility. I wasn't just doing the policy or wasn't just doing the money or the people. I was trying to do both. And I believe that if the State Department is going to change really into a more modern institution, we have to deal with that. The second thing is I had the good fortune in my career to be assistants to two kind of tremendous people. One was Lord Carrington, who was the Secretary General of NATO, and also John Whitehead, who I'm sure many of your listeners know as having been the head of Goldman Sachs for 10 years, but was also the Deputy Secretary of State. And the thing that they gave to me more than anything else was a joy of decision-making. They wanted to go and decide things. They didn't want to go to meetings to have meetings. They wanted to know what was on the agenda to decide. And it gave me a confidence that I could decide things, I should decide things, and that I wanted to decide things. And that's something I'm grateful to them and certainly something that's stood me, I hope, in good stead in my career.
Well, perhaps using those two men as examples, what are the other qualities that you've observed as key characteristics of good leaders?
Well, again, I think decisiveness is one, but the flip side as well, which is that you have to let other people make decisions And you have to be ready to kind of be big enough to recognize that you've got to hire people that are smarter and better than you are and let them do their own jobs. And I think also, as Whitehead taught me, you must also recognize that if people make 500 or 600 decisions in a week, not every single one of them is going to be right. And he and I used to have actually quite a nice thing for me, more for him, I guess, which was to say, when I made a mistake, he wanted me to come in and say three things. One, he wanted to know the enormity of it. How bad was it? Give him the whole story. Second thing, what had I done to fix that mistake? And third, what had I learned from making that mistake so at least I wouldn't make that one again? And his rule was that if you could give him the three sentences in sort of clear, commonsensical way, that was enough. You got credit for making the decision. He recognized that you'd made a mistake, but we were prepared to go on from there. And I've tried to live that way since I had the good fortune to work for him.
How did he get comfortable with the people around him making decisions? Often that's a very difficult thing for managers to do.
Well, he taught me, and I've tried very hard to emulate this, the belief that he could only be in one place at a time. But if he had the right kind of people working for him, it essentially allowed his influence, and I hope my influence, now that I'm have the good fortune to be a responsible party, to be in many more places simultaneously. I can only sit behind my desk or make one telephone call at a time or be on one radio show at a time. But I'm hoping that back at my office, all the people who we've worked together with now and tried to inculcate with our values are making the right decisions. And I don't need to be there. I need to just believe that they're going to do right. And that's what we ask people to do.
Does that lead you being deeply involved in the hiring so that you are familiar with the people on your staff?
Very much so. One of the things about being the Director General of the Foreign Service and Director of Human Resources is I get to be involved in hiring anyway. but certainly if realtors believe it's location, 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 I mean, for us anyway, it's people, people, people. And whether I was the Deputy Chief of Mission in Turkey or then the Ambassador to Turkey or the Assistant Secretary for European Affairs, I spent a very large amount of time making sure that we had the right people working for the organization. Otherwise, it was hopeless, absolutely hopeless.
As you look over your career, do you think the top qualities of leaders have changed over time?
I don't know about the qualities of leadership because, again, you're back to decisiveness and the ability to delegate. But certainly some of the things that leaders need to know have changed. I joined the Foreign Service what seems like a long time ago now, and being technologically able, I don't say adept, but able, wasn't at all a quality you needed in 1976, but you sure need it now. I don't mean to say that you have to be a technician, but you have to understand the capacity of technology to help you. And secondly, to go back to the point we were making before with Patty, is that this combination of ability to manage resources and policy simultaneously is something also that I think is new and did not exist, or probably should have existed, but didn't exist when I joined the Foreign Service.
Do you think these qualities will change as we look out to leaders in the now this century?
I think leaders of the next century, certainly in my business, will face kind of challenges that we really can't even see, not so much in the profession of diplomacy, but in the challenges to America's democracy. And if you look at the 18 or 19 things in the State Department strategic plan today, you see things that are traditional. Make sure that we're protecting the United States, no regional conflicts, protecting American citizens abroad. But if you look at the other things that are on that list, you know, stop trafficking in women and children, stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons, make sure that there's more democracy in this world, make sure that we have a sustainable environment, sustainable economic growth. Those are not the issues I was dealing with 25 years ago. I tell new officers now that I envy them because they're going to be pioneers in a diplomacy, in a profession I'm not even sure we can even see yet.
And because the issues will be so new, will that give them more opportunities to make decisions like you talked about, or will it require more training to understand how complex all these things are before they can get the opportunities that you described you had?
Paul, I think the answer to that question is both. One of the things that the State Department needs to do right now is get more serious about training. If you compare my biography to a biography of a military officer who's kind of similar age or similar rank, what's the difference? Well, he or she in the military has been trained repeatedly and properly so. And I really have not had the benefit of that. So we got to deal with that question. And then on the other side, I think it'll allow people to make many more decisions because all the things we've got to do now are active things. We're no longer just advising the Secretary of State on what she should say to the then Soviet foreign minister. You're actually doing something.
Well, great. It's time for a break. We'll be right back with more of the Business of Government Hour.